Charting Toward Intimacy covers mature topics. Listener discretion is advised. The assumptions you are making about sex are killing your sex life. They close you off to the fruits of your sexual relationship. So what are the most common assumptions that we make? How are they affecting our sex lives? And how can we begin to set those assumptions aside in order to better our sex life? Welcome to Charting Toward Intimacy, the Catholic sex and intimacy podcast for women. My name is Ellen Holloway, and I am a Catholic speaker and coach who specializes in sex and marital intimacy, and I am on a mission to help you expand your understanding of the beauty of sexual intimacy and grow in holiness through the gift of your body. And with me today, I have my awesome semi-regular co-host. We still need to come up with a title for her, Kathleen Chavanis. The assumptions that you're making about sex are closing you off to the incredible form of communication that sex truly is. We all make assumptions. Kathleen and I both struggle with making assumptions. Most of this list that Kathleen and I are going to share with you today are either things that Kathleen and I struggled with in the past or things that we currently struggle with now. This is going to be awesome.
We're excited for this episode.
This is like, we've got a great like bullet list of things we want to talk about here. Really quick before we get to the rest of the episode, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception is coming up on December 8th, 2023. Saints Anne and Joachim likely had incredible sex at that time. No joke, I'm serious. We are talking Adam and Eve before the fall level of unity in body and spirit. I want your sex life to rival theirs. So in honor of the Feast of the Immaculate Conception on December 8th, I'm doing a sale on the orgasm course for Catholic women. I have 8 coupon codes for $49 off of the course. I have 16 coupon codes for $29 off, and I have unlimited coupon codes for $19 off of the orgasm course. Those codes are in the show notes. Check them right now. I expect those first 8 coupons to go very quickly. So if you're hearing this, click the link in the show notes right now to get your hands on the orgasm course today. These coupon codes are only going to be available through December 8th, so through 11:59 p.m. on December 8th, 2023. Click the link in the show notes to grab those coupon codes.
I think that, you know, we all have assumptions. We don't even really realize it, you know? So to be able to label these things and bring them to our own attention, right, I think is going to be really helpful to a lot of us.
Well, and it's like, even as I was typing some of these ideas out, I was like, bah, these are assumptions I hold.
Yeah, exactly.
I should really work on this.
Right. And it's like, you didn't even think about it. Like, you didn't even realize that you had assumptions, right? And you're just like, oh, it doesn't have to necessarily be this way. I could work on this thing.
Yeah. So we've got kind of like a couple different categories. First, we're just going to kind of talk about like sex in general, like assumptions about sex. And then we're going to talk about kind of like some assumptions about ourselves that have to do with sex. And then some assumptions about our husband that have to do with sex. So a couple different categories. And honestly, like, I'm thinking this is going to be one of those episodes where something, we're going to say something and you're going to want to jot it down. So, you know, keep that pen and paper handy.
Well, here's a question that I want to pose to you first, Ellen, is why can assumptions, our assumptions in this sense that we're talking about them, why can they be problematic to our sex life?
Well, Kathleen, assumptions make an ass out of you and me.
You know what they say about assuming.
You set me up for that.
That was perfect. Oh my, I love gosh.
It. Woo! That was not planned, you guys. I'm not even sure I listened to your question because I like felt the setup.
Oh my
I
gosh.
Like, I know what I'm going like, to say.
Okay, I will pose it again. Pay attention this time. Why, in the sense that we're talking about them, why can assumptions that we hold about sex be problematic to our sexual relationship?
Oh, yeah. Okay. That is a good question. Well, here's the thing, is that sex is a form of communication, an incredibly intimate, incredibly vulnerable, like, way of communicating love, of communicating the language of the body. That's something that John Paul II talks about in Theology of the Body a lot. And when we make assumptions in places of communication, and if we just take, like, let's take a super simple scenario of, like, you made a mistake at work, and now you have to go talk to your boss, right? and you make this assumption that your boss is going to be so mad. Like, and you're just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I made this mistake. So you get really nervous. Then you start getting kind of like defensive and you're like, okay, how am I going to back this up? How am I going to, right? And then you go into that conversation instead of open and ready to just share what happened and problem solve. You go into that encounter with your boss, like closed off, ready to defend, or you go in meekly and like scared and nervous, right? Not in an open and collaborative way.
Yeah.
If you take that, you know, to the bedroom, right? If we make assumptions about what is going to happen, how it's supposed to look, how it's supposed to be, what we're supposed to be doing, thinking, feeling, what our husband's supposed to be doing, thinking, feeling. If we make these assumptions before we even enter into the act, we're not able to be open to what our husband actually wants to communicate to us.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, that just... It just closes us off to a lot of the incredible benefits of the communicative properties of sex.
Yeah.
What else do you think?
I love it. The only other thing that I think I would add is that sometimes in making a lot of these assumptions, we sort of lay groundwork for resentment in our relationship. Yes. That, you know, if you're just kind of thinking one thing without actually communicating about it, you can assume a lot of negative things about your husband or about just your sexual relationship in general, right? You can sort of take one thing and not talk about it because for whatever reason, you just don't want to, or maybe you do feel bitter about it and you don't want to talk about it. And the entire time you could actually be misunderstanding or assuming something that is making an ass out of you and me. But it could actually have this negative effect on your relationship, and that it's so important that we actually always bring these things up, no matter how awkward you might feel, no matter how painful it might feel, no matter how bitter you might feel, because you need to give your spouse the benefit of the doubt and the opportunity to be wrong, honestly, which is a really humbling thing, especially in a sexual sphere. So let's talk about some of them.
Let's do it. Okay. So the first one we have here on our list is sex should take X amount of time. I feel like I am constantly combating this one, which is why I put it first.
Yeah.
Because look, there's a difference between saying this needs to take this long. That's how long it should take versus this is how much time we have. And let's make the most of it. I think, because that happens a lot. It's kind of like, oh, okay, well, we've got kind of a half hour to have sex or something. It's okay to kind of know that you have that much time. But if you put limits on it, like this encounter should take no longer than X amount of time, then you start getting this negative self-talk inside your brain when or if, like, you're kind of not getting aroused as quickly as you should be. And then you start telling yourself, oh my gosh, I'm taking too long. Oh my gosh, this must be boring for my husband. Oh my gosh, blah, 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 blah. Right? You start making a whole bunch more assumptions. And then it becomes almost impossible to break past those and like continue on in your arousal curve and continue on toward orgasm.
Yeah. It's true. And, you know, I think that the beauty of like setting of time is that it could be like anything in there. Like maybe sometimes you've got like 10 minutes, right? Like real true quickie, right? And then maybe sometimes you like have a whole hour, right? Maybe sometimes it doesn't even matter how you could take all day if you want to, you know, like it never has to be the same. There's so much that can alter, right? That it's like we kind of have like free reign in terms of time, which is cool because there is no like, it has to take at least this. No, like it could take 10 minutes. It could take 2 hours. It could take however long you want it to take. You know, it's like a really cool sort of freeing thing about it.
You know what I found about that freedom too, is that the more time I have, the more like time freedom I have, I feel like the quicker it takes me to get aroused, right? Because I'm less focused on the time. So, you know, consider that as well.
That's very, very true. I second that 1,000%.
Okay. The next one we have on here, I should easily want to have sex. This assumption comes from misunderstanding responsive desire and spontaneous desire. Spontaneous desire, really quick. We've got a whole episode on it. Don't know what number it is. Go find it. It's just easily labeled. Word.
Yeah.
Spontaneous desire means that, like, you truly do spontaneously, physically desire sex. So a thought pops into your head and you're like, yeah, okay, I could have sex right now. Responsive desire actually requires physical stimulation before your brain actually wants to have sex. So, I mean, I don't even know if there's that much to say about this one, except just like, this is a lie. Stop making this assumption.
Right. Yeah. No. And that's something that, you know, we've personally struggled a lot with, is this misunderstanding of desire. And that I think it's really easy to sort of assume, like, the Hollywood version of of what sex looks like is what it should look like, right? But it doesn't have to look like a Hollywood movie. That's actually, in fact, it probably shouldn't look like a Hollywood movie most of the time, right? But
I hope not.
Exactly. But you know, that's not, I think that Hollywood has actually done us a disservice in saying, like, oh yeah, like, you should just spontaneously, if you're really attracted, if you really love, you know, your spouse, you will just desire them anywhere and everywhere. And that's not how the human body is built. That is a total lie. I mean, for some people it is that way, and that's great. Right. There's nothing wrong with it.
Roughly, but it's 50% not everybody of the population. Not necessarily like all men. Like that's a common misconception too. That like all men have spontaneous desire and all women have responsive desire. Total. That's not true. But it is roughly half of the human population has spontaneous desire and responsive desire.
Yeah. So don't buy into the lie.
It's ridiculous.
The next one is that we should always aim for an orgasm at the same time. It's fine to do that. It's really cool to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It is sometimes really hard to do that. So it is usually really hard to do that. So I think that, you know, there is a really cool unitive, it's like an added bonus to sex if you can achieve that. However, if it's being made the goal, sex can become very stressful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the point of it. So it's great to have it happen that way. If you find that you can make it happen, great, cool. But do not make it your focus, because it's not a requirement. And sex is supposed to be fun. It is supposed to be unitive. It's not supposed to be a cause of that kind of stress if it's becoming your focus when it's really hard. It's a hard thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Also, like, talking about your arousal curves and desire and everything. I mean, we kind of just talked about it in desire, but like, your arousal curve is also not supposed to be the same. It doesn't have to be the same. If it is the same, great. That makes it super easy on you. Like, I love that. But if it's different,
love that for you.
Love that for you. Love it for you. Would love it for me. Not the case. You know,
I had someone legitimately say that to me. Like, I've always heard it as jokes. And then I had like a bagger say that to me about my like bags that I have for my groceries. She was like, I love these for you. Like, serious. I was like, thank you.
Thank you.
I have these really pretty bags, but like,
that's complimenting my grocery bags.
Thank you.
That's hysterical. Oh my gosh. Love that for you.
I thought people only said it as jokes.
Hilarious. Anyway, so your arousal curves do not have to be the same. And honestly,
honestly shouldn't be. Like, female and male arousal curves look very different.
They often look very different, you know? And I think it is such a testament to love to be able to work with those arousal curves, right? To be able to like see your spouse as part of you, but different. And to be able to approach your intimate relationship with that in mind, that like, mm-hmm. I mean, they are my spouse, they are a part of me, but they are different, you know, and then learning those differences and working with those differences and learning how to come together around those differences is really such a testament to love.
Sex is a form of communication, right? Like we learn things about each other during sex, and we learn how to work with each other's kind of different designs. Like, we're all individual and we all have kind of a different, you know, a different timeline of our arousal curve. I think I said something that maybe might not have made so much sense. I said, you know, male and female arousal curves should look different. It's not that they necessarily look different. Like, it's kind of the same going up toward orgasm and then down toward resolution.
Right.
But it's the, like, the time that the excitement phase takes, the time that the plateau phase takes, the time that the orgasm phase takes. Like, men's orgasms are super short. Women's orgasms can be extremely long. It's a little different. But
yeah. You know what? Actually, this actually also brings me to another assumption that I am guilty of oft, is that I think it, for someone who is more of a responsive desire type, your arousal curve could look, it could be like a roller coaster, mm-hmm. right? Versus a more spontaneous desire type who's like, it's just like a straight line. Like, there's very little to interpret. Like, it's pretty easy, right? But if you're a responsive desire looking more like a roller coaster, there's a lot, it can make it sort of like, almost tricky. Like, there's a lot to learn about that. So in our relationship, my husband is very spontaneous desire. I am very responsive desire. And I often assume on in like, you know, situations where it's like, maybe I feel like it's taking me a little bit longer to kind of like really get, I'll assume that like, he's got to be so irritated right now. Like, he's got to be so annoyed right now. Like, this is taking so much work. And oh my gosh, does it, like, props to my husband, because he puts in a lot more work than I do when it comes to like actually having sex. Like, it's just like, there's like one thing that's required, right? For like him to really enjoy it. He's got to learn to like push all these different buttons and all at different times. They got to be timed just right. Like, it's just like working this really complex, like technical keyboard, right? Yeah, like a switchboard, exactly. And he's like got it down. Like, it's great. But like, I think about it often that just like, wow, I almost feel guilty because it's like, I don't really need to do that much. Like, I don't need to work that hard, like as hard as he does, you know?
Okay, and so see, now there is another assumption, Kathleen.
Exactly.
You're feeling this guilt,
yes,
of not, you know, not working hard enough during sex. But one of the things that I talk about a lot in one-on-one coaching is that, like, sex is an opportunity to receive. And something that women are historically terrible at is receiving.
Yeah.
We're so good at giving. We're so good. Like, we can give ourselves, like, sick and dead.
Basically. Right. Well, and I think that is the assumption that I always end up falling into. There's this guilt that sets in, right? This, like, he's got to be so annoyed by me right now. Like, he's got to, like, be getting bored of this. And when I talk to him about it, he's like, were you there for that? Like, you thought boredom was what I was experiencing, you know?
Like, he's like, no, that was fun. Yeah.
Honestly, were you, like, present in any way, shape, or form?
I think maybe we should skip ahead to some of the husband assumptions, because this is a great segue into this, because that's something, that's an assumption so common, is that, like, my husband is bored right now during sex. Mm-hmm. This is taking too long. I'm taking too long to get aroused. I, like, ladies, listen to me when I say this to you. And then listen to your husband when he probably tells you the exact same thing. Sex is fun.
What?
What? What?
What?
Your husband enjoys the process of turning you on. Your husband enjoys kissing your lips or other areas of your body. Your husband enjoys touching your body anywhere.
Period.
Anywhere. It doesn't really matter. Your husband most likely enjoys touching your body. The things that we do in foreplay, I can pretty much guarantee your husband enjoys them.
Exactly. So don't
feel guilty. There's my PSA.
Tell future Kathleen.
Right? No, but we have to remind ourselves of that all the time, because
I do have to.
This trap too.
Yeah.
Of just like, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, this is taking too long. And then luckily, the beauty of awareness of this, because I think this is probably kind of like the number one issue that a lot of women yeah. have, is just this like negative self-talk that's going on in your head of, I'm taking too long, this isn't fun for him, maybe is this even fun for me, like you're like right. not even sure, you're second guessing yourself, like am right. I enjoying this, I don't know. Once you have awareness that that's a problem that you have, that is like honestly 90% of the problem. Now yeah. all you need to do is gently talk back to yourself and just remind yourself, no, this, you know, this is something good and holy that we're doing. I do enjoy this. Mm-hmm. My husband enjoys this. We can take as long as we need. And or, you know, okay, sure, maybe we are on a bit of a time crunch, but like we can just enjoy what can happen in this amount of time, right?
Yeah.
And just like, just gently talk back to yourself again.
Yeah.
Get her like reined in. Because she's rude.
She's rude. So true. She is rude.
Okay, some other assumptions that we have about our husband. Big one. My husband needs sex. Nobody needs sex. Nobody died from not having sex. Nobody needs to release sexual tension. That is not a physical need of the human body. And no, please stop telling me that men have to ejaculate after a certain amount of time in order to relieve the sperm production process.
It's like
that's not
pressure
true.
Builds up with it. just like needs to like just needs to explode like a volcano.
Yeah. First of all, your body's not a volcano. But second of all, the male body does in fact have a natural way of taking care of that. And it's called a wet dream. That is a real, natural, biological process that takes care of that particular, very small issue. And if you go ask a priest, I don't necessarily recommend you do this, but, or like maybe a celibate man or something. If you go ask a celibate man how often they have wet dreams, it's not that often.
Right, yeah.
But their body does take, like, the male body does take care of that. So, no. Like, I don't even want to talk about this anymore.
We're moving on to the next assumption. Because this is just ridiculous.
It is. Okay. The next one I have on here.
Oh, man.
I have to initiate because that's what a good wife does. When we say these, I have to do this, I should do this, this is what a good wife looks like, this is what a good sexual relationship looks like. Like, it's just, you gotta throw all of that out and recognize that sex is a form of communication between you and your husband, and your relationship is gonna look totally different. And the way to combat this one is, I am really on a soapbox right now, like, I got really fired up about that last one.
Yeah, you did. I love when that happens.
The way to combat this one is to talk about what you both expect and want with initiation. Yeah. Talk to your husband. If you think you are supposed to be initiating because that's what your husband wants, you need to go talk to him and ask him if that is in fact what he wants. Or maybe he'd like the opportunity to initiate, but because you initiate every like 2 or 3 days, he's like, I'll never get the opportunity. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And I think that it is, like, your point to, like, have a conversation about this is so important, because maybe it is your husband's desire that you initiate more. And then fair enough, like, his desires, your desires should all be taken into account, right?
Yes.
And they need to be talked about in order for them to be made known. And if it is his desire for you to initiate more, then definitely take that into account, right? Like, but it's not the initiation of itself that makes you a good wife. It's how you respond to your husband's desires, like, and requests. Ooh. Right? Like, how you work together. It's not the initiation itself. It's responding to his needs.
Yes, that was beautiful. Yeah. I love that. Let's close out on this kind of like triple play of assumptions. Yeah. We have here at the mm-hmm. bottom. My husband likes X during foreplay, or my husband doesn't like X during foreplay. My husband would never agree to X. my husband wouldn't want to do X. All of these, all of those, we are assuming unless we've had a conversation.
Yeah.
And like, if there is something that you would like to try in the bedroom and your first thought is, ah, my husband would never want to do that, you're assuming, right? And you're not allowing sex to be that that form of communication.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And or you're kind of, you're closing sex off to maybe a part of that form of communication, right?
Yeah.
And so I think what I want to just like end this episode on is the way to combat so many of these assumptions that we kind of talked about in the later half of like assumptions about the other is communication. Yeah. Is sitting down and talking about sex. And I know it's uncomfortable. And I know you're like, I could never do that. But I promise you, like, sex gets so much better when you start talking about it.
And I do want to insert here, like, a suggestion because, you know, it's a lot easier said than done because a lot of the time, like, conversations around sex don't feel natural. They don't feel, they feel mm-hmm. weird, even though you love your spouse and you guys share literally everything. It can still feel weird.
Yeah.
Something that we started initiating, and we haven't been doing as much lately, but we have to get back into. And this was my husband's idea. He was like, I just want to take time every single day to talk about sex, to talk about our relationship vis-a-vis our sexual relationship. Right. And so it was like, it could be 5 minutes, it could be an hour, it didn't matter how long, but there was a point in every single day where we had to stop and talk about sex. And the conversation could be whatever we wanted it to. So if this is something that you need to talk about, like, oh, I don't think he would ever be, you know, down with X, Y, or Z, it can just be, you have to talk about it every single day anyway. So pick a day, pick the day mm-hmm. that you're going to approach it and talk about it. And it just makes it a lot easier knowing that you don't have to bring up this like big weighty topic, right? You're going to talk about it no matter what every day anyway, in some regard. So now you just have to decide what facet of it you're talking about each day. So something that maybe you could try if you are somebody who has a really hard time talking about it and feels awkward, just make it a point to have some conversation about sex every single day.
Yeah. And I think that recommendation is beautiful. And we do have a podcast episode. It's called Do You Talk About Sex Every Day?
Yeah.
Very well titled.
But if you haven't listened to it, you heard it here.
Yeah. But that Kathleen kind of goes into a little bit more detail about kind of how they approach that. And we give some suggestions on like how to maybe set that up if you want to do that. Because we highly recommend that method because conversations about sex can feel very weighty. But if we can take the weight off of them, it's easier. It's a lot easier.
Yes.
Thanks so much for listening. If you are not already following us on Instagram, be sure to check us out at Charting Toward Intimacy. And if you listen to podcasts on a platform that gives you the option to rate or review, we'd love for you to do that because it helps us spread the word about the podcast. If you ever have questions, comments, or episode topic ideas, please reach out to us. We love to hear from you. You can reach out on Instagram or send us an email. Our email is in the show notes. Until next time. We'll